Today in Movie Rollers, we talk about Spider-Man Homecoming and The Beguiled. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
Hi.
We've had a little bit of a hiatus with the Yazdi, you've been out of town. So
We've been out of town.
Oh my God.
We've all been out of town.
Yes.
Watching movies in the... in the plane.
In back of airplanes.
Definitely, yes. It's good. We can catch up on the ones which got away. The ones which slipped through our fingers, we can catch up on.
Yeah. All good foreign movies.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I know there's one you're dying to talk about here, Rashmi.
Yeah. I saw this brilliant movie. It's a Korean movie and it's called How to Break Up with My Cat. And it was just, it was divine in many ways. Let's put it that way.
I actually caught up with a Hitchcock movie.
What did you see?
Vertigo.
So good.
So good.
You know, for the longest time, Citizen Kane was number one on the list of the best movie of all time that all the reviewers in the world vote on.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, blasphemy, like 3 years ago when they voted again, Vertigo moved into the top spot.
Really?
Best movie ever made. I don't know if it's quite the best movie ever made.
I struggle with the best movie ever made, but it's fun. It was effective thriller. I mean, it's dated. You know, clearly there are, I think, some movie ideas in there that wouldn't work with modern audiences, but it was good.
And Yasti, did you see anything of note?
I caught up on a couple of Indian movies when I was traveling. There's one called Ae Dil Hai Mushkil, which translates to "Oh Love, You're Difficult."
Sounds like something Joe would say.
But it's made by Karan Johar, who's pretty big in the Indian cinema.
And a good director.
Yeah, he's a man who doesn't know subtlety, you know, if you look for it.
Right.
And he kind of goes for... he tries to do a 500 Days of Summer and unfortunately fails. So it's a great movie in the first half, but I literally could not bear to watch it. The last half hour was just painful. I really could not watch it. I was so annoyed by how over the top and how, you know, just so melodramatic it was. You know, like, it's like, it's not enough that people suffer, that in the last half hour somebody should get cancer. You know, it's like, come on, don't do that. That's such a lame crutch. You know, it's like, come on, we've suffered through these people.
But
enough.
Come on, it's a Bollywood movie.
Somebody
you know. They've come a long, 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 long way.
Bollywood, you always have to have that nahi moment everyone's like overwhelmed with the emotion of it all. So
yes.
So anyway, we got two movies to talk about, but before we do that, let's do our usual I can't find anything to watch on Netflix segment, where we give you what the is in our Netflix queue, or what's coming up, what we're excited about coming out in Netflix in July.
So. Or things that we watched, that we loved.
Yeah, or things that we've seen either at film festival. I mean, that's one of the things. Every now and then we see a little film festival gem go straight to Netflix because of the distribution mess. But straight to Netflix in many cases is not a bad thing. That just means a wide audience gets to access a movie that might be quite small. But
yeah.
So, guys, what's in your Netflix queues? What you got?
So, I'm going to go first, and considering that I was in India for quite some time, and I just got back a few days ago, I'm going to go with one of probably the most beloved films in all of Indian history, and that's saying a lot, because Bollywood makes more movies than anybody else, you know, on a daily basis. And that movie is a movie from the 60s. It's called Mughal-e-Azam, which literally means the domain of the Mughals, or the kingdom of the Mughals. And it doesn't get more epic than this movie does.
Right.
And it was made in the 60s and then, you know, more famously in the last 15 or 20 years. With a lot of labor, they colorized. It was a black and white movie, but they colorized
except for
it.
The last scene. This is one of my favorite movies of all time, Yazdi. What a great choice.
Yeah.
With an amazing soundtrack.
And it's just epic. Yeah, it's got an amazing soundtrack. It's epic. It's larger than life. No, it's
about 2.5
hours and 8 minutes.
Okay.
But it's beautiful. It's beautiful. Beautiful. It's a great story. It's kind of one of those what would you say, like unrequited love in the sense of prince meets, you know, maiden.
Right.
Okay.
And falls in love.
Falls in love with, you know, the girl who
He shouldn't fall in love with,
and it's about armies and about, you know, him having to deal with his father who doesn't want him to marry his girl.
It's about duty versus love.
Does it have a nahi moment?
Absolutely.
Yes.
And okay. Great sacrifices and, you know, horrible outcomes, and it's just
beautiful production, mm-hmm. like these amazing palaces and.
And is the Netflix version the colorized version or is it black
and
white?
It is the colorized version. Yes.
Okay. With subtitles.
With subtitles.
Great movie, just a great classic.
Yeah,
it's like a Gone with the Wind. I think if you had to compare it to something that was as epic in Hollywood, mm-hmm. I would say it's on par with something like Gone with the Wind.
Absolutely.
They don't make them like that anymore.
They don't. So it's Mughal-e-Azam. I know it's a mouthful, but check it out, guys.
Mine is the total opposite of Mughal-e-Azam, except it also begins with an M. Mortal Kombat from 1995.
Oh, God, where's
this
me?
Is a... my God, it's like my guilty pleasure. I love this movie. It's so panned. It was so panned. It's so bad. But it's so good, and I love the game. I love the game, thanks to Joe. So 1995, Mortal Kombat.
It's interesting because I hated the game.
I love the game. I love the whole finish him and all the characters like Scorpion and it's wonderful. I love it. Mortal Kombat. It's out. Watch it.
That's a really big slice of cheese there. It was an interesting movie. I mean, for many years, like video game movies have been, you know, kind of disasters. I think Assassin's Creed is another one that didn't quite translate. But Mortal Kombat, did capture the ridiculousness and the fun of the video game.
Yeah,
and
it was so fun. I would say it's fun.
I'm not one to kind of, you know, wholeheartedly recommend this movie, but, you know, it's too unlimited soundtrack, you know, that kind of... It has that... like massive energy all the way through it. So
it's great. It's fun. And it's got like costumes that look like the game. And I think it's one of the movies that was a good representation of the game. And that's what made it hammy and cheesy in a sense. It made it quite two-dimensional.
Visually.
I mean, this is before the time of green screen and, you know, great effects like we see on X-Men or Spider-Man that we're going to talk about. But
the game was notorious because it had decapitation in it, and I think there was that was one of the first video games that was
and freezing with really, Sub-Zero. I love it,
but it caused a lot. It had these what were known as kill moves, where most kind of fighting games you would literally just beat the other person and then would fall down unconscious. When Mortal Kombat came out, there were like death moves, and it was controversial, and the game plays with that towards the end, which is kind of fun, but it doesn't get quite as R-rated as it could be because the game was really a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
All right, with my pick, we're going to return to India, and I'm picking the movie Lion. Which was...
That's a quick entry to Netflix.
It is. I mean, I think Lion has always had that kind of smaller movie thing to it. I mean, it was not a big release. I think they struggled to find kind of a mainstream audience for it before the Oscar nominations. And I think it was nominated... I know...
Nicole Kidman was nominated for Best Supporting Actress. Yep. And Dev Patel was nominated for Best Supporting Actor. And then Garth Davis, the director, was nominated for Best Director.
So I think that then gave the movie kind of a second wind. And, you know, it did pretty well. I know a lot of people who have seen this. And given that it's not a kind of a multiplex movie, but... it's a movie that we all, that we all love this one?
Absolutely.
You know, Rashmi and I think caught it at the San Diego Film Festival late last year. And it's a movie that I think about often because it's not a perfect movie, but it handles its emotionality extraordinarily well. Yeah. And I think, you know, I was refusing to let the movie kind of get to me until the very last scene, and then, you know, I blubbed, and it kind of stayed with me ever since, you know, simply because of those moments. And you know, some wonderful child acting in this one. Dev Patel is very good, but I think the you know, some of the scenes, the early scenes in the movie, I don't want to get too much into the plot because I think you should see it without researching it. But you know, some of the younger scenes of the with the children actors were just I think it's about as best as that's ever been done in my mind.
Nicole Kidman was great in this. I kind of feel like this is, she's having a bit of a renaissance. I'm going to talk about her in one of the movies today. But she's picking some really good roles at the minute.
I think she's let go of her vanity and her fear, and she's taking on everything that comes her way. And it's really,
and the Botox has melted. Yeah. Fillers are gone. Yeah. So, you know, we can see some emotion again.
And I mean, I have much more fondness for the first half of the movie than the second half. Because the first half, and it's because of that incredible child actor, Sunny Pawar, who is just amazing.
Beautiful.
Not a hint of artifice on his face. But like the first half is almost like Dickens to me. It's about, you know, this little kid lost in a world too cruel.
Yes.
And it's hard to do that kind of stuff. Yeah. And Lion is all kinds of good stuff. I don't know of a single person that I've recommended it who didn't like it. Yeah.
Okay, so let's recap. Yazdi, your movie was?
Mughal-e-Azam.
I'm going to have to try hard.
That's fine.
to remember that one. Rashmi?
Mortal Kombat.
I don't have to try to remember that one at all. And then there's Lion, which I think we all remember.
Yes.
Okay, let's move into our reviews of the week then. So we have Spider-Man Homecoming and The Beguiled. Where would you like to start?
The Beguiled.
Okay. And I believe I'm introing this one. So I'm just going to read the Rotten Tomatoes synopsis. This is a movie essentially directed by Sofia Coppola. It's a remake of a movie. And yes, have you seen the original, Rashmi? I know you haven't. So it's described, billed here as an atmospheric thriller from acclaimed writer-director Sofia Coppola. The story unfolds during the Civil War at a Southern girls' boarding school. It's sheltered young women taking an injured enemy soldier. As they provide refuge and tend to his wounds, the house is taken over with sexual tension, dangerous rivalries, and taboos are broken in an unexpected turn of events. That's got far too much in there. Damn you, Rotten Tomatoes description. The movie stars Colin Farrell, Nicole Kidman, Kirsten Dunst, Elle Fanning as the main leads. There are many others in here, and it's done pretty well critically, so I'm kind of interested to hear what you guys think of The Beguiled.
So I had to look up the definition. I didn't actually know what to beguile means. So for those of you like me who are a little stupid, to beguile means to charm or enchant someone, sometimes in a deceptive way, or to help time pass pleasantly, which I thought was a perfect title for the movie. This is a dark and delicious narrative for me about sisterhood and the perils and joys of it set against the Civil War. And it burns slowly as it unfolds to its climax. This is simply exquisite. I loved everything about the movie. The acting, the dialogue, the directing, the production, the costume, the cinematography, and an incredible cast, including some great younger girls. This may be my favorite movie of the year so far.
What? Yes, Dee.
Yeah, Sofia Coppola is, she's a mixed bag. I mean, all her movies tend to be these moody pieces about women trying to fit into a world that's not ready for them. I guess if I have to find a theme which connects all of her movies. And I think this is by far her tightest, most accomplished, least contemplative movie. It's a zippy hour and 40 minutes. And like you, Rashmi, I really think it's quite an achievement. I mean, she won Best Director at Cannes this year for this movie. Only the second woman ever to win the Best Director prize. And I think it's because, when left to her own resources, she likes to make these very contemplative, meditative movies, which, you know, have their joys. But I think here she takes an adaptation of a movie that I haven't seen, and she really infuses it with modern politics, but she never really lays a heavy hand on anything. In fact, the movie is completely free of judgment as far as I can tell. You watch this movie and you decide who's good and who's bad in this at the end. And it kind of plays out this whole morality play with a very unexpected outcome. And it leaves you thinking about, was this person right to deserve this? Was this person right to do this? And it's about as well as, and we can talk more about it, it's about as well as I've seen a rooster and a hen house kind of a story, right? This is at its crux, this is a rooster and a hen house story. So there's all these women, they're kind of isolated because there's a war raging outside, and a man enters the hen house and how it kind of throws everything off. So I would really recommend this to everyone.
You haven't told us if you like it yet.
I love it.
Oh, good. Absolutely. Yeah. I was thinking you're going in that direction.
No, I'm sorry. I thought I made it very... I mean, I think this is beautifully made. It's tight, you know, and you're kind of your loyalties are, and she does due justice to each of the characters. And that's hard to do because there's seven female characters and one male character. And you're kind of thinking about each one of them. And in a way, it reminded me a little bit of Ex Machina, because it was about who's playing with whom. There's like this whole cat and mouse thing going on. And there's much to be said about it, but no, it's brilliant. I loved it.
Come on, Joe.
He hated it.
I mean, this is, I'll start off by saying that, I mean, Sofia Coppola, one of my favorite movies of all time is probably Lost in Translation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that I think was her debut, or maybe she made the movie before that, The Virgin Suicides, which I haven't seen.
It was the one that she got the most recognition for, I think, when she did it.
Was when I at least sat up and kind of noticed her as a director. And... this is probably my least favorite Sofia Coppola movie of the ones that I've seen, including the dreadful Bling Ring from a couple of years ago.
Really?
Which I really enjoyed the Bling Ring. If you go back to our review of that, I remember.
But you think that was better than this?
I enjoyed it more than this. Better
you didn't
is,
enjoy this.
So
okay, go on. Yeah. We'll let you talk. How about we let you talk, Joe?
Well, it's
what do you mean you didn't love this as much as us?
It's because I struggle with this one. I think all the ingredients are there for me, but I think maybe it's because of that moral ambiguity. The movie mm-hmm. doesn't take a position, and mm-hmm. I feel it came off a little toothless in that regard. I wanted it to point fingers. I wanted the build of the drama and the, you know, but instead, you know, we see a lot of events play out, but the movie, like you say, refuses to judge anybody, and I kind of want someone to blame. So,
but if you think about it, you'll find plenty to blame.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of all around. But as a consequence, I just felt it was...
You were unsatisfied?
It was sitting on the fence for me. And I need to be taken from one side to the other.
Right.
But it's not to say it's a bad movie. I think the performances had me mesmerized all the way through. Mm-hmm. I think everyone does such a great job here. You know, Kirsten Dunst, we haven't seen her for a while.
Elle
Fanning is, you know, ridiculously good in this, as is Nicole Kidman and Colin Farrell. So, you know, it's a piece of work that I admire. It's my least favorite Coppola movie.
So I get what you're saying, Joe, about the fact that to me, everyone in this movie is to blame and blameless. Yeah. And I think that is the genius of this movie. Yeah. But more than that, other than the blame, I think it plays with two things really, really well. It plays with the whole ethos of hell hath no fury like a woman scorned.
Yeah.
And it also plays with this struggle for survival. And each one of those characters doing, well, except Colin Farrell, because he's not the woman scorned, but it's just this beautiful interplay of characters.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think it captures so well. It captures the desires and the motivations of each one of those characters perfectly. And that's what was a joy to watch. Because not only are you seeing each one of those eight characters go through their own journey, in a sense, but you're also having this incredible mindfuck going on between all of them as well. Because each one is sort of trying to get ahead of the other. I just think nothing about this movie is phoned in. I mean, it's so tense at times, I literally wanted to chew my hand off. I was literally on the edge of my seat at one point in time. And I think, you know, we've named the four main characters, the four sort of the A-listers in a sense, but the supporting cast of younger girls, and to think that most of them are sort of probably under 18, they were perfect, pitch perfect. Yeah, I can't say enough good things about this movie.
Una Lawrence, who I've seen in a lot of movies.
Yes.
She was in that god-awful Jake Gyllenhaal boxing movie. She was his daughter.
Southpaw. Which I loved.
And then, in the movie with Ryan Gosling and, gosh, why am I blanking out? The movie last year, mm-hmm. which was set in the 70s.
No,
Ryan
no.
and Russell Crowe and
oh, the nice guys.
The nice guys. She played
correct
Ryan Gosling's daughter. That was the right. other yes. female. So I've seen these actors, but they are so good here.
Yeah,
especially the one who plays Miss Amy.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting, you know, it's hard to capture puberty and the effect of a man on prepubescent tweens. Mm-hmm. And it's perfectly done without sort of, it goes up to the line at times for those younger girls, but it never crosses the line. I just love that
and I think,
sort of tension that builds and builds, and you're just thinking, oh my God, what is gonna happen here?
And that's where I think maybe it was a little unsatisfying for me, because it build, it's like planting bombs, but never light, you know, never kind of hitting the trigger, you know, that it's all there. The tension builds up, but I'm looking for explosions and guts and blood everywhere. You know, I'm looking for the carnage that results from some of the tensions that arise. And you know, we get some level of that, but you know, all of the bombs that are planted, only a few of them kind of go off and
some of them go off screen, actually, which
yes.
I was surprised.
Yes,
there's a pivot
exactly
point
yeah.
in the movie
yeah.
where
exactly
everybody is playing their little parts, everybody's being decent, and then something, one event happens in the middle of the night,
mm-hmm.
you know, which leads to physical harm to one of the characters. But that physical harm happens off screen, and I would have thought that somebody else would have really like shown that in gory detail.
I want the Tarantino version.
You wanted the Tarantino version. But the movie
yeah.
just completely bypasses that. It's not interested in the gore. And I think it really is more interested in creating that tension and that atmosphere. And it's about heaving bosoms, you know. It really is about there's a lot of
that's a really good way to describe it.
It's all about heaving
my
bosoms.
My bosom heaved a lot.
Yeah,
I'm telling
a lot
you.
Of heaving bosom. But it just wants to create this, I don't know, this animalistic kind of, you know, literally I was thinking of like, you know, like
vultures.
Like vultures
yeah.
with rabbits, you know. It kind of mm-hmm. gives this feeling of predator and prey, you know, and I liked, it's not easy to do that, and I liked how it builds that, and that alone was satisfying for me. But I know what you mean by you wanted some big, you know,
it was
explosion
all,
from
all,
it. Right.
It was setting everything up for this, you know, Mexican standoff style finale. You know, boom, 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 boom. Everyone gets taken out. Anyway.
I mean, I would just say the other thing is that the one other thing that I noticed, and I don't often notice this until it's slaps you in the face, was the cinematography mm-hmm. was absolutely stunning in this. I mean, there are scenes at the beginning where we're kind of walking through the woods mm-hmm. and each one of those looked like a Monet painting to me. I mean, these were just stunning vistas and beautiful setups. And again, yeah, I just wanted to react to something you said. I think that whole thing of heaving bosom, sorry, I mm-hmm. kind of
yeah.
chopped and changed there. I think it's the improperness in a very proper time.
Yeah, yeah.
It kind of captures that beautifully.
Yeah.
Right? Because these are angry people because of a situation they're in, but they're also very proper. It's a very proper time.
Right.
Right, and with long skirts and, you
and
know.
And you're corsetting
correct.
These young women's burgeoning sexualities in a way. There's this amazing movie, Criterion has an edition of it. It's a Peter Weir movie called Picnic at Hanging Rock. And it's about a clustered, you know, in Australia, up in the very, very rural part. It's about in the early 1700s, the school of women only. And, you know, it has that same sense of foreboding. And really, I'm not giving anything away. The whole movie is about a group of girls go on a picnic and they don't come back.
Oh, God.
And it's the whole thing is created with tension, but there is so much of this repression that you can feel in the air, you know, that because you're not, because of the times, you're not allowed to express that it kind of all weighs down on the movie beautifully. So in a way, this movie kind of reminded me partly of Mustang, you know, movie we saw about, you know, girls growing up together in close proximity where they are friends with each other, but they're also their rivals.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot this movie is talking about. It's talking about female rivalry. It's talking about men versus women. It's talking about, you know,
the banding together, the sisterhood that comes as well. Right.
At what point? It's because it's very interesting. This is not a men. I said men versus women, but it's not really a men versus women story at all. It's about these women, these girls, and women are attracted to this man, and yet something bad comes out of it. And it's because nobody can help being who they are. So it's fascinating. It's not pointing any fingers at all. And I think depending on where you sit politically, you will find faults with one or more of the players more than others. So that's pretty amazing.
I think it also, to add to what you're saying, Yazdi, it's this concept of scarcity, right? There's a civil war going on. We're in different tense, filled situation, and now there's scarcity of a lot of things, including now you put a rooster in the hen house.
Yeah.
And the rooster in the hen house comment, we saw a little movie today called The Little Hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wonderful movie.
Which, again, has, I mean, it's more, I feel sorry for the rooster in The Little Hours, but it's that same kind of thing where, you know, there is a convent and there is one guy in the convent, and it's a completely different movie.
Right.
But that it has that kind of, It does that more effectively in some ways from my mind.
Well, it's more obvious.
Because it goes nuts with the whole idea of it.
Yeah, it's more obvious.
It's a completely different film.
Yeah.
One that we would talk about one episode, I'm sure. But but that movie has the... It goes there. And then some.
Yeah.
And the other thing which amazed me is that Sofia Coppola has really, I think, come a ways, because there's nothing wasted in this movie, like you said. The cinematography is impeccable. I mean, there's just these shots of a girl who looks out through a
telescope, type thing.
And that kind of breaks up days in the movie. It kind of tells you every day this girl goes out and looks out in the evening, and it kind of breaks up the whole movie into, okay, now it's evening, now it's the next day. But what really impressed me is this is not a fluid movie. You know, the camera is still most of the time. The camera rarely ever moves. Mm-hmm. People come in and out of the frame of this camera. So it's a very patient movie, but yet it's very crisp and precise. And it's not trying to show off. It's what's in front of the camera that it leaves, you know, you to be impressed with. It's not trying to do any fancy tricks with, like with a movie like this. I could see how it could pan above the rooms of girls and pan above the room of the Colin Farrell character, and it could go, you know, it could kind of play silly tricks, but that would be totally the wrong thing to do.
Yeah.
So anyway,
Go ahead. Eight out of ten. Sounds like a summing up.
8 out of 10. For me, Sofia Coppola's most accomplished, Titus, probably the most commercially successful film as well, I'm going to guess. It just plays at many, many, many levels, as a thriller, as a, you know, as a documentation of, you know, how things were historically, and hundreds of, you know, ethical things that you can bring to bear.
That are relevant today.
That are very relevant today.
Jen.
And gorgeously acted. I mean, Kirsten Dunst she's kind of fallen on the side. She doesn't get nearly enough credit, and see how good she is here.
Yeah, she seems to be making a comeback after Hidden Figures.
I hope so.
Joe.
So, I mean, very well acted, written, directed. You know, there's a lot to admire here, but I think ultimately for me, the movie ends up feeling a little too understated for it to be satisfying for, you know, a middle of the road kind of movie viewer like me. So I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10, which is really stingy. I think that's almost punitive, but it's because I have higher expectations of Sofia Coppola's movies, because they work so well for me otherwise. So again, I think there's some deliberate restraint here, which left the movie just shy of my expectations.
You wanted a Mortal Kombat finish him moment, didn't you?
Yeah, I wanted it all to happen.
This is one of the best ensemble movies I've seen in recent times, and that just manages to stay so focused and is exquisitely executed. This is my 10.
No.
I love this movie. I can't say enough good things about this movie. Love. I can't wait to see it again.
Wow. I didn't realize you loved it so much. That's amazing.
Loved this movie. It's so saucy and cheeky and naughty at times.
It is.
It's really naughty. I mean, Nicole Kidman. Look, I'm always hard on Nicole Kidman. Phenomenal.
Yeah, that's a difficult role. That's because, and it doesn't dwell on any of these things. You know, her relationship with Colin Farrell, there's all kinds of underpinnings there, and it doesn't really show them. Mm. And maybe that's why you hated it. But I, you know, you have to kind of guess what's going on there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that's true for each of those
yeah.
Interactions. But anyway.
All right, moving on. Movie number two of the week is Spider-Man Homecoming. So, Yasti, are you going to tell us about this one?
I will. And for whatever reason, whatever possessed Hollywood to make its third iteration in 15 years of the Spider-Man story. First, we had Tobey Maguire, then we had Andrew Garfield, and now we have newcomer, Australian newcomer Tom Holland. Playing Spider-Man. So this is the third round in the series with Spider-Man Homecoming. I guess once Spider-Man became part of the Marvel franchise, they couldn't leave it be, and they decided to reboot it yet another time. This movie is directed by John Watts, who looks fairly young, and the only movies he's got to his credit is a movie called Clown and another one called Cop Car with Kevin Bacon, neither one of which I've seen. But the writing credits include eight people: Jonathan Goldstein, John Francis Daley, John Watts, the director himself, Christopher Ford, Chris McKenna, Eric Sommers. Jonathan Goldstein and John Francis Daley also provide the story. And then, of course, Stan Lee is given credit because it's based on a Marvel comic book. And essentially, this is the same story that we know of. Our young teenage Peter Parker gets bitten by a radioactive spider, and so he gets these powers, and there is Aunt May, and he's battling with the bad guys. And I haven't seen the movie. I really want to see it, but I just want to, before you guys jump into it, this is a very, very good cast here. By the way, I'm a big fan of Tom Holland. He was phenomenal in this movie called The Impossible, with Naomi Watts and Ewan McGregor, about the tsunami crisis. And then at the Tribeca Film Festival, I saw him on a terrific movie.
I think in
movie
two movies you saw him, right? Wasn't he in two that you saw?
Yeah, he was in Pilgrimage. And then most recently, he was in The Lost City of Z.
Correct.
That's right, yes.
But here he is playing Spidey. And we saw him as Spider-Man in Avengers.
Yeah, the Avengers, last year. Civil War, was it?
Civil War, yeah.
Captain America! Which we thought was an Avengers movie. It was actually Captain America.
Yeah. Captain America Civil War, yes. So Tom Holland plays Spider-Man, and Michael Keaton plays the bad guy, Vulture. Robert Downey Jr. returns as Iron Man. Marissa Tomei plays Aunt May. Jon Favreau is here. Gwyneth Paltrow is there as Pepper Potts, you know, Iron Man's love interest. And then Zendaya is here. Is it the same one? The singer?
Yes.
Donald Glover, who is all kinds of good stuff, is here as well. And then we have Tony Rovellurie, who we last saw in the Wes Anderson movie.
Grand Budapest Hotel.
Grand Budapest Hotel. And the cast is rounded up by Hannibal Buress and Tyne Daly. So I haven't seen this movie. It's getting great reviews. I really like Tom Holland. Please tell me that I need to rush out and see it, because I'm dying to.
Well, first of all, I'm going to correct you on the fact that this isn't the standard Spider-Man origin story where he gets, you know, ordinary teenager gets bitten by a radioactive spider, because the movie doesn't really have to tell us that anymore. We've seen that over and over and over and over again. Okay. So I was really dreading another, here we go, ordinary kid, radioactive spider, superpower kid. The movie just starts off with Spider-Man being, you know, a kid. And I think what I'll say about this is that it is a complete change in tone. I'm a huge fan of the Sam Raimi iteration of Spider-Man, the Tobey Maguire version, the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man franchise. Mm-hmm. Not so much. I think they were trying to take it to the Nolan-verse and kind of failed with kind of a heavier, more brooding Spider-Man. Here we have a return to a teenage kid with superpowers. And with that, the movie kind of zings along with so much energy and effortless kind of fun. It's a very fun superhero movie. Is that particularly my flavor of superhero movies? Not so much. So, you know, not going to say that I loved this movie, but it was a lovely slice of popcorn entertainment. And, you know, people talk about the family friendliness of this. It is. It's absolutely one of those movies that you could take your kids to, but you're as adults, you'd have a great time with it. It you know, it doesn't go to deep, dark places. It's not about the bad guy this time either. It's about Spider-Man as a kid growing up. You know, there is some coming of age moments here where he realizes with great power comes great responsibility, and that's nicely done. So
did you steal my notes? Okay, so when I heard about the rebooting of Spider-Man, I was thinking, no, we haven't even digested Andrew Garfield yet. But yes, this is the Spider-Man movie we have all been waiting for. Yes, the rush out and see this one. Okay. This is a splendid way to spend 2 hours and 13 minutes. And a lot of that has to do, yes, you said it, with just how adorable, cheeky, and well-cast Tom Holland is as Spider-Man. So I think, Joe, you just said it, you know, although it's a reboot, I really like that it didn't start at that origin, and instead it tells us more about the character and what drives him. My criticism or question I have is, I wonder if we would have been able to celebrate this movie as a standalone in a universe which didn't feel like an Avengers bolt-on. So it feels very much like it's... a spin-off of an Avengers universe.
I mean, Iron Man plays a huge part in this movie.
So again, that's my only question about it. Having said that, though, it's great. It's a really, really fun movie.
Yeah, I mean, I struggle with the whole idea of, you know, revisiting these characters over and over again, and it does feel
which we're going to do for a while now, right? Because Marvel have just acquired all the rights, and
yeah, and look, I mean, you know, they make a ton of money, and I get why that. I mean, my major beef with the movie, it doesn't bring anything new. I think it takes Spidey to a place that's fun, but you know, as a superhero, I feel like he's been done, you know, and. The Tobey Maguire iteration is not the definitive Spider-Man, but it's a very good balance for me of the kind of the darker DC and the more lighthearted Marvel type stuff. You know, we look at something like Wonder Woman that we watched recently. It's a fun movie, but it's a little heavier in tone than this one, and I think that sits better with me. You know, from a superhero, it's very earnest, but it's not. You know, there are some serious moments in it in terms of the evil that exists around us. This isn't about the baddie at all. Michael Keaton's a very fun baddie here, and I think he nails it. But, you know, I wanted a bit more of his transformation instead. You know, the movie introduces him and then skips to 9 years later when... And this is not a spoiler, but there's none of that kind of... And here's how he became, you know, evil bad guy. Butcher, you know, it's like... Yeah. Suddenly he's there. So I like those bad guy explorations. I think in many ways superhero movies for me are about the villains, and the great villains make them. So
yeah, but I do. I mean, to your point about it doesn't bring anything new, I do like the attempt at, you always say this, the verisimilitude, like the Chris Nolan universe, although this isn't as dark as Brooding. So yes, you can breathe a sigh of relief. I like that there's some reason for all the gadgets and the powers. And I also like this exploration of, are you really bad if you do it for a good reason? That's very interesting to me, because what we see at the beginning of the movie and why we jump 9 years is the reason for exploring this. Are you really a bad person if you do it for a good reason?
Sure.
Right?
Can I argue with you on the verisimilitude?
Yeah.
I think I know where you're going with that, because it's not just that he has these like magical powers. It's that he also has a suit that has tremendous capabilities, right?
Right.
But those are just voodoo. Like, you know,
But also the baddie, right? The baddie's not just a person with wings who flies. He has a contraption that he gets into, and that gives him the ability to fly. Same as when you look at something like... the character, and it's jumping out of my mind, the one that Tom Hardy plays.
Bane.
Yeah, the reason that Bane has the big, you know, mask on his face is because he's been in some accident. All I'm saying is that it's attempting to do something a little bit different than this person had some chemical, you know, spilt on them, and now they've grown into a different, they've morphed into a different character.
Okay, yeah, I didn't realize that you were talking about the bad guy, because I think Spider-Man has extraordinary capabilities through his suit, but his
suit... And that's what's explored, right?
But
this whole
suit,
thing of, are you who you are, or do you need these extra things to make you who you want to be?
We'll talk about verisimilitude some other time, because I'll dominate this podcast with thoughts about that, and I don't want to do that. I'm amazed at how well this movie has reviewed. I mean, it's running 93% on Rotten Tomatoes, and wow. I think you know, that's higher than I would have expected.
Really.
But you know, simply
I think if Chris Nolan had done this, you would be agreeing.
But that's the thing. He didn't. And it doesn't feel like that, right? I mean, that's ultimately the thing. It feels... It's almost... For me, the lightest of all the Marvel movies, you know, I enjoyed
really?
Captain America.
Lighter than Ant-Man?
I think so. I mean, Ant-Man.
No,
Ant-Man's more of a comedy.
Yeah, this is not an out-and-out comedy.
Yeah,
but it's light. It's frothy, and okay. I think to the point there, Joe. I think Yazzie said this in his, no, you said this. It's not. It's more about the coming of age of Peter Parker. And I like that. I like, because he was always the young cheeky boy.
Well, one of the reviews that I read about this says that the movie, or maybe I watched it, but it says that the movie owes a debt of gratitude more to John Hughes than, something like, you know, the previous iterations of the Marvel Universe. And I completely see that, because it has those kind of, teenage moments, the transition from, you know, being... somewhat impetuous, you know, you're impulsive and well-meaning, but not necessarily mature and skilled enough to be restrained enough to make the difficult decisions in life. And that's you know, that this movie is about the journey that he takes to becoming an adult.
Yeah, it's about, I mean, again, I think
he's like, I've got these powers, I can go beat up bad guys and I can save the world right now, and I really want to do it because I've got the power and I'm 15 years old and I know everything. And it captures that journey through, oh, heck, I really don't know anything and I've got a lot to learn.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think it also captured this whole essence of kind of duty versus desire.
Mm.
Right? Your duty to do something and what's the right thing to do versus what you want to do and what you think you should do. Mm. What's interesting is apparently Spider-Man did appear, a young Spider-Man, Peter Parker, appears in Iron Man 2. So we have, the universes are already connected.
Merging,
so,
right.
I mean, again, very, very minor point. The only thing I didn't like was Marissa Tomei as Aunt May just didn't work for me. That was a little bit...
Because she's too young to play that?
Well, you know, you imagine there's going to be a stripper pole in the kitchen.
Oh!
but they play it for that?
Yeah, it's played
for some,
like that.
For some, I never remembered in any of the Spider-Man lore, you know, Aunt May being, you know, hot Aunt May. This is a hot Aunt May.
Well, because they hired Marissa Tomei, which was a bad decision to begin with.
It's not a casting thing. The character is written like a MILF. I mean,
but I think they wrote it like that because they had Marissa Tomei.
Oh, okay.
Maybe I don't know. Maybe it's the other way around.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's a chicken and egg situation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For me, I think that this isn't played the same way in the parental Aunt May. This Aunt May's are just a little bit saucy.
It's a little off-putting.
I agree with you there.
Yeah, it's a little bit off-kilter.
It feels like it's there for the teenage boys, you know, with the with the mummy complex. I don't know. It's like, it's a little odd.
Yeah.
And unnecessary in my mind.
Yeah.
Listen, Marissa Tomei doesn't get enough work in Hollywood.
I agree. So.
I
love her. And it was great to see her. And she acts it, you know, well. Okay, I'll sum up. So for me, this is more Deadpool, although not so adult in its approach. I think it ends up feeling more like a coming-of-age movie, as you said, Joe, than a superhero movie per se, but it does not detract from how fun this is to watch. For me, this is almost perfect. I love this movie. Easily a 9 out of 10.
Wow.
I agree with the Rotten Tomatoes.
No, Rashmi's in a happy place,
this
clearly.
I had such a fun time. In fact, you know, there's such good tension. I actually had butt clench fatigue at one point.
Really?
Literally, yeah. There's a lot of tension towards the end as well.
Hmm. Okay.
For me, this is really just a matter of taste and flavor, and like
not
I
Chris
said,
Nolan.
Well, no, like I said before, you know, my it just feels a little too bouncy, you know, it's too joyous, which is
there's nothing wrong with joyous.
That's how superheroes movies.
Yeah,
didn't you read comic books? They were joyous.
Not the ones I read, and that's the thing. I want a little more darkness in the world. You know, I think for me that then creates real reasons for the heroes to do what they do. So anyway, it's very well executed. It's immensely fun, and you know, they avoid the one thing that we didn't talk about, Rashmi, and I don't know if you felt this, but this is the first time that I've seen Spider-Man bouncing around cities and not immediately gone to, oh, that's CGI.
Right. Oh, that's good. So they've improved the, yeah, for me, the uncanny valley.
Because every time, every time since 2002, since they've done Spider-Man, it's always felt like as soon as he puts the suit on, and then we start seeing the big kind of city scenes where he's swinging, it looks like a cartoon character. Yeah. And I didn't have those moments here. There's a terrific scene on the obelisk in DC? The big tall thing, the Washington Monument. Heathen. I'm going to get refused to become a citizen because of that. But I think there's a really great moment where he's climbing that, and it feels like he's climbing that.
Correct.
And it feels frightening, and it doesn't feel like CG, you know. And they also avoid the big CG finale. I mean, there is some of that, but it doesn't get anything like Wonder Woman did at the end, which was just ridiculous.
Or Batman versus Superman. Yeah. Right. There's none of that in this movie, you know.
Right.
I noticed it maybe more at the beginning when he's on the top of the buildings, right at the beginning. But I think you're right.
They've improved the technology to a point where it's not as immediately jarring. Doesn't take me out of the movie as much as it used to. So I'm going to give this a very stingy. I'm staying stingy
you're
today.
Like
sorry,
stingy
guys.
Today, yeah.
7 out of 10. Yeah, it's a fun movie. It's one that I would recommend wholeheartedly to anybody. But I don't know that we will be talking about this in a couple of years' time. This is going to come and go. It's a very, very light throwaway movie. It will do very well.
Oh, it's coming back.
And everyone's going to enjoy
it. They told us at the end.
But this isn't a great superhero movie in the terms of greatness. It's a very good, fun superhero movie, but it's not a great one.
Yes, do go see it.
I think you'll have a ton of fun with it.
I think everyone will watch it. It was completely engaging and fun. I mean, I don't mean to take anything away. It's just, it doesn't do anything new. Okay. For me, at least. So, let's wrap up. We've got another podcast to record right now. And Yazdi, I know you're very jet-lagged, having, you know, just flown across many, many time zones, including the international dateline, right? Yes. So you really are in a different day. So let's wrap up. Mail at movieallers.com, twitter.com/movieallers, facebook.com/movieallers as well. Until our next podcast episode, too many movies, too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.